Welcome to the Student Press Law Center podcast for August 2009, a monthly rundown of news about legal developments affecting the student media. The Student Press Law Center is a champion for student voices. We recognize the essential role that free speech and a free press play in a democratic society, and the SPLC is committed to nurturing and protecting those freedoms for the next generation. For more information about the center's work, go to www.splc.org. I'm Frank Lamonti, Executive Director of the Student Press Law Center. Thanks for joining us. People who know the Student Press Law Center probably know us as an organization that fights censorship of the student media. That's the truth, but it's not the whole truth. We spend an increasing amount of our time at the SPLC helping people at the college and the high school levels prevent censorship controversies from ever occurring. Well, we're at the start of a new school year, and it's a good time for students and media advisors to have a conversation about what to do if a censorship controversy arises, and especially to start thinking about whether they've done everything they can to minimize the risk of being a victim of censorship. Our experience at the SPLC is that censorship of student expression often starts with a single public comment to a school board, a superintendent, or a principal. A few squeaky wheels in the community, especially if they're politically active squeaky wheels with connections at the school board, can make life miserable for students who are trying to do nothing more than have an honest discussion about what everyone in their school is already talking about. Well, if you have the misfortune to be the target of a complaint about editorial content, your most important ally will be citizens in your local community who recognize the value of a free and independent student journalistic voice and are not shy about speaking up. The reality is that a taxpaying member of the community, someone who votes in school board elections, is far more likely to be listened to than a student or a teacher if the content of your publication is under fire. Well, the cheapest censorship insurance you can buy is to build community support for your journalism program before you need it. The time to locate the emergency exits is before the building catches on fire, and the time to start lining up a network of support is before a censorship controversy erupts. We are fortunate today to have joining us for this podcast two outstanding high school journalism advisors from two award-winning journalism programs in Virginia who have succeeded in energizing alumni and parents to be active, visible supporters of their student publications. Valerie Kessler of Harrisonburg High School and Chad Rummel of Oakton High School, thanks for joining us. Valerie Kessler, let's start with you. Can you describe, Valerie, how your journalism program at Harrisburg succeeded in putting together a network of alumni supporters?
Some of the students who were graduating wanted to maintain contact with each other, and so they actually contacted me and wanted to start an alumni association, and they chose the Facebook venue as their way to start getting people together, but they made it a closed group, and so people started requesting to join, and folks who had been in the program years earlier, the ones who were starting this whole thing up, didn't know who they were, so that was when I had to make the jump into Facebook so that I could admit people into the organization.
And how does the organization work, and what kinds of activities, if any, do the alumni do to keep in touch with one another and to keep active?
Well, they, like I say, use Facebook fairly extensively and have an email database going on to communicate with each other. And at the same time, they plan activities throughout the year. We will do a newsletter through the email deal and post that on our newspaper's website. And they'll plan things like a social around homecoming, because that's when most of the kids are back in town, something at Christmas. And then they usually like to get involved with the banquet at the end of the year and do a scholarship. I know the first year they also got together, and I think about 12 of them went on a cruise together in the summertime as an activity.
Wow, that's good. So this has really become a way for alumni themselves maybe to benefit by maintaining a social network that might otherwise have been lost.
Yeah, and it's been an interesting development of a pool of resources, really, too, because of the alumni, probably a small fraction are really involved still with professional journalism, But at the same time, they use a lot of the skills that they learned in their professional lives and in their college lives. And so they become a resource for me, actually, for people to come back to the classroom to help out with things, to work with summer camps on occasions, and to actually, I know some of them are going to be involved with the National Convention in D.C. in November as well.
That's great. And did you find that people were readily interested in participating in this, or did they have to be dragged kicking and screaming into it?
No, they were very. I mean, I think the group has grown to close to 100 online, and when they do the newsletter, they're very eager to tell their stories of what they've done with their lives or where they've gone to college and how they've used it. And they like to go back and talk about, like, their favorite memories of going to conventions or dumb things they did in the classroom or that kind of thing. Or they're, you know, I find it interesting as an advisor, I don't always think about the things that really have an impact on kids, but they will all remember their very first story assignment and the thing that scared them the most, usually in a journalism class.
That's great. Well, and you mentioned that they're a source of volunteer support, like guest speakers, trainers coming into the classroom. Have you been able to leverage them at all for any financial support, buying ads, things like that?
Yes, we do. We've had some actually that will buy the current year staff T-shirt, and we'll sell that in the alumni newsletter. But yeah, like I say, every year they do. The first year they did a $500 scholarship, and last year they did one $500 and one $250 one, and then they came actually to the banquet to present the scholarship. And you know, most journalism programs tend to, when one member of the family gets in, the others kind of get roped into going through the program too in a lot of situations if they have a positive experience. And so it's neat to see the different alumni actually come to the banquet. That's something we offer for them to come to. And in a given year, I'll probably have 15 or 20 alumni there.
That's great. And for those who are intimidated by what may sound like a lot of work, Valerie, can you describe sort of how much labor is this for you? And is there some labor in maintaining this network that the students can do or that the alumni can do themselves?
You know, for me, the alumni mainly do it themselves. The only thing I have to do is be the connection, because I seem to be the one central person who knows all of the alumni because they've gone through the program. But then they'll contact me when they want to do something and say, could you put out a word that we want to do this? And so I'll just distribute that with what they want to do. But I don't really see it as a lot of extra work. I mean, right now, at the beginning of the year, I'll ask them all to send me their addresses to update all of our contact information, and we send them the publication, the newspaper, free every year so they can still see the high school paper. But really, you know, other than that, it's just a little bit of work, and I can have someone who's on staff now do that too.
That's great. Well, the sending out of the free copies of the newspaper is a great practical tip for somebody that's thinking about starting one of these at their own school. Any other tips along those lines for somebody who maybe wants to try to get an organization like this off the ground?
Well, I think, too, you know, talk about practical uses. They can still write, too, and submit things to the paper. In fact, I had one of the alumni last year who is now teaching first grade actually attend inauguration there in D.C., and she did a first-person account that we ended up publishing as an alumni, you know, sending it back in. And so I thought that kind of thing was cool, you know, because that just gives a different angle. You know, when she graduated from the school and the kids get to read about someone who attended and compare that to a teenager who's attended, I don't know, it's just a neat variable.
Sure, sure, and keeps up that sense of affiliation with the paper. That's great.
Yeah, and the school.
Well, one question that comes to the Student Press Law Center from time to time, and just to sort of kick this in at this point, people will ask, if I'm starting a Facebook group like this, is it okay to use the name? Is it okay to use the logo? What level of affiliation can I have with the school? And the answer is really, as long as you don't imply informing the group that it's in any way an official arm or outgrowth of the school, it's perfectly fine to say, you know, alumni of the Daily Times or the Central News or whatever, because after all, you know, that's going to go on your resume. You know, that's a life experience that you're perfectly free to claim that as a life experience, as the school doesn't have any monopoly on the use of that name or that phrase, just as long as you don't imply that the group is somehow a school endorsed or school affiliated or speaks for the school, and it's easy to just come up with some disclaimer language like that.
So, right.
That'd be a good practical thing for anybody that's thinking about starting a group. Chad Rama, let me turn to you. You've got a really active parental support group for your publications at Oakton High School. Can you tell us how that came about and how you've managed to maintain that?
Sure, Frank. It started out with a really small endeavor. As long as I've been teaching journalism, I've always sent out a monthly email newsletter to my parents of the Kids in Journalism 1 newspaper and yearbook. It's a simple email that goes maybe 4 or 5 paragraphs, a small bulleted list of things that are going on. And I did that my first year here at Oakton. And at the beginning of my second year, I kept doing it. And we had some controversy over a problem article at one point. And that same month, I sent out my regular monthly newsletter, and a parent replied all to everyone and began a discussion among the parents about supporting the students who were being attacked in the community. And so we had these parents all of a sudden talking about what can we do to help you, what can we do to support the program. And that's where the ball started rolling. We had parents that wanted to come in and talk to kids, parents that wanted to bring food. And we began, at that point, having parents bring in food for work nights. Through email, we coordinated 1 or 2 parents. Each work night began to bring food. The next thing you know, we have parents that are wanting to organize car washes for us. We're at the point now where we've completed an application for 501c3 nonprofit status. We have an official elected board. In fact, the board is even meeting without me. They don't involve me in those decisions because it's completely 100% them supporting the school and the program to raise money for students to offset the cost of printing as the recession affects our advertising, and to make sure we have some cushion in case we can't afford to print the yearbook because of lower book sales. In addition, they're looking at providing scholarships now. We have an active website. We have a parent listserv. And it's all started from just that little bit of communication that I was doing on a regular basis to now where the parents are communicating with each other about the program. They've become quite big advocates for us in that regard, and it's all done by them and not me, which is great.
Yeah, that's very exciting. So what is the attitude of the administration at your school been toward having an organization like this? Do they generally seem supportive of it?
You know, we have several booster groups in our school. We have a band booster group, chorus booster group, athletics booster group. And as long as it keeps the teacher out of the mix of it, you know, I'm on their board as an advisor, and that's it. I'm not a voting member. I have no fiduciary responsibilities. The money goes through the parents. It's all 100% a nonprofit group outside of the school that's just here to help us out when they can. Our principal is very supportive of these groups and the parent community at Oakton because they are so involved, and they want to see us not only do the minimum to get by, but they want to see us go above and beyond, and they especially don't want any kind of budget recession to affect what our kids do here inside the school. So our parents are supportive, and our principal is very appreciative of that.
Well, Chad, one of the things that always is a problem when you're dealing with student media is turnover and continuity. And I would imagine that in a booster organization like this one, you've got a fair amount of turnover as well. So how do you keep continuity as students graduate and move on?
Sure, definitely. You know, it's a problem in our courses because every couple of years we get a big group of seniors and they're gone, and we seem to go back to what we call a building year. And we definitely want to avoid that in a booster group. So what we've really worked to do is include those beginning kids, those Journalism 1 students, as active members of our booster group. Those parents are getting involved just as much as the other parents. Even though there's not a work night to bring food to, or there's not a publication to stand behind and champion, these are the parents that are staying involved in the communication. They're bringing treats into the regular Journalism 1 classroom. They're helping out. They're contributing financially of their freshman students. And then they're in our program for 4 years. So we usually have our parents involved for 3 or 4 years, and we can kind of look at that and say, okay, who's going to step up next? You know, let's train a sophomore parent to step up. Let's train a junior parent to step up. And I have, you know, I have wonderful kids, and their parents are very supportive, and so they want to see the program go even after the student graduates.
Well, Chad, your school is in suburban Virginia district that would probably fairly be described as an upper middle class area. Do you think that somebody listening who's maybe in a different demographic district, somebody who's in a real rural area, a real inner city area, could they get a group like this going with a completely different demographic composition?
I think so. You know, it's not about how much you can do. It's about doing what you can at your own means. And everybody has a different scale at which they can contribute. I have students in our program who are not by any means in the affluent upper echelon of our school. However, these students are being supported by the Boosters program as well. For example, there are a number of kids in our staff who can never afford to go to a national conference. So we have parents that are providing scholarships to get kids to conferences. We have parents that can't contribute and financially to the program, but they can come in and help scan ads, or they can chaperone a field trip. Everybody can do something, you know, and it's not about the finances. It's about the parents being your champions and your parents adding enthusiasm to your program, and everybody can do that no matter what their socioeconomic status is.
That's great. Well, I asked this of Valerie, Chad. Do you have any practical suggestions for, let's say I'm at a school that doesn't have any tradition of having a parental support group. Maybe it's even a relatively new journalism program. How do I go about getting something like this off the ground?
You know, one thing we have to remember is that a lot of our kids are very active, and they may be playing two or three sports, and those parents are stretched thin. But there is a certain number of our students that are not involved anywhere else, that journalism, newspaper, yearbook, broadcast, lit mag, this is what they stand up for. This is what they're really excited about. And there are parents out there who want to be that booster mom. They want to be standing on the sidelines somewhere cheering on their students. So you have to find a couple of parents like that and really kind of plant a seed in them and have them push it for you. I've had great parents who they know that their kids can do great things, but they haven't had the chance to stand on the sidelines and cheer for their student at a game. So they're excited and thrilled to actually get the chance to come in on a work night and see their kid doing something great. And so start out small and bring those parents in. Let them see how exciting it is to be in the newsroom on a work night. Let them come in and see how talented their kids really are. And those parents, they'll take the ball and run with it. You know, it seems like we're asking a lot of our parents, but these parents really want to be involved. I don't know of many of my parents in the school that don't want to get out there and do something for their kids. You know, we have to not think about it as one more time we're asking the parents to do something, because for some parents, this is the first time they're being asked to get involved, and they truly appreciate the chance to be involved and support their kid.
That's great. Well, Valerie Kibler and Chad Rummel, I want to thank you both for some really practical advice and some very inspirational examples of how a alumni group or a parent group can work in practice in a school to benefit not only the teacher's life, but make the students' lives better and make the program stronger. So thanks for being here. Thanks for joining us. And thanks to everyone who's listening today for joining us for the Student Press Law Center podcast for August of 2009. We encourage you to check out the news and reference materials on the SPLC website, www.splc.org. Become a fan of the Student Press Law Center on Facebook and follow us on Twitter. And if you are a student journalist or a journalism advisor looking for advice on starting an alumni association or a parents booster club, or you have any question about your legal rights, call the SPLC hotline at 703-807-1904 or email us at splc@splc.org. Thank you for listening. Thank you.